Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Good evening and welcome everybody to episode 13 of Swinging from the Hip. Yes, we're up to lucky number 13. And tonight we'll be looking at the first test between England and the West Indies and also looking ahead to the second test that's starting in about 2 hours. And we're hearing some massive news coming out of the England camp. And thanks to Hussein Hanif for a heads up on that news coming out, and we'll go into that a little bit later in the show. But before we dig into that, welcome to Rohit, and how's your evening going?
G'day, yeah, very good.
That's great.
Yes.
Big day. Yeah, big hours. We've just been talking. He's been doing some big long hours, 12 plus hour, 14 hour days. So yes, if he falls asleep, we know why he's fallen asleep, and we'll just wake him up. Right.
Might be because of the cricket.
Yeah. All right, let's crack into it, and we'll go with Rohit's week in history.
Yeah, well, good evening, everyone. So, digging around a bit earlier to see what was happening in this last week, there's been a few birthdays crop up. 1984, we had July 13th, Faf du Plessis, he celebrated a birthday. And an interesting one here, I thought, was July 16th, 1973, with Sean Pollock. Now, Sean was one of those great all-rounders for South Africa coming out of the Pollock family, which, you know, we all know of. But the interesting thing about Sean, he was the captain of South Africa. And when the South Africans hosted the World Cup, I think it was back in 2003, they played against the West Indies, and he made a monumental cock-up with the Duckworth-Lewis score. And having lost to the West Indies, which kicked them out of their own tournament, unfortunately, which was being hosted by South Africa, Zimbabwe, and Kenya. Now, being a wicketkeeper, Bob Taylor celebrated a birthday, July 17th, 1941, he was born. A couple of our own Kiwis here, so Black Caps, July 17th, again, pretty good day for cricketers. 1944, Mark Burgess, and 1975, Andre Adams. Celebrated their birthdays. Moving on to last, what do we got? July 18th, Carlos Braithwaite celebrating his birthday in a couple of days' time. Just jumped ahead a couple of days there, so how tired I was. But I don't know if you remember this, but Braithwaite, he got himself into cricket lore, shall we say, for his four lusty blows on one of the biggest stages when you know, when he smashed about 19 runs off that last over to win the 2016 T20 against England. So it was winning that game for them. Now, July 18, now this is an oldie, 1848, pioneer of our game. He was born and known as a dashing batsman, cunning round arm, slow medium bowler, and owner of the most famous beard in sport, W.G. Grace. otherwise known as the Doctor or the Champion in his day. But to us, I've always known him as WG. And moving over the ditch, July 18, 1949, Dennis Lilly celebrating his birthday in a couple of days' time. And just a bit of it, moving back into history again. Now, this is one that's broken many a heart and been talked about a lot this week and brings up really bad memories, unfortunately. But July 14 last year was when that World Cup was played out, and it's still a big scar on oneself here, similar to that 2007 scar that's still starting to slowly wear off. So I won't really want to talk too much more about it. We all know what happened in that final. And let's just say that's the week that was.
Yeah, look, it's something that that tries to play again, but we block it out, don't we? So did it even happen, really?
That's right.
I mean, like, we go, what happened?
Was there a game? I don't know.
Hey, look, also that Carlos Braithwaite, I'll make sure I get my Braithwaites right. Carlos Braithwaite, yeah, those four boundaries in the last over to win that for it was just sensational. And I think it was an amazing game. It was almost like, if I remember rightly, it was getting rather dark and there was talk, you know, with the lights coming on and everything. So,
I was just having a look at that. I think he hits, four massive sixes, sealing the deal with two balls to spare. Now, I don't know if you recall, but that just brings me back to our own who celebrated his birthday with, or celebrating tomorrow, Andre Adams. Yep. Now, I recall a game that he played in. It was a local derby match. I think it was in one of the one-day finals with Auckland. Might have been playing the ND of all teams. And what was it? We needed 13 runs off the final ball, and we still won it.
13 off the no ball? No ball six?
One went for six, and then another one went for six.
Bugger.
So, yeah, that's one for the books, isn't it? 13.
Absolutely.
And winning the final.
And it wasn't Cricket Max.
No. So there you go. Yeah, put that in the memory banks for that pub quiz question.
Absolutely. Well, moving from this week in history, we'll move to this week's news. And we've basically not a lot happening outside of the test match, tell you the truth, but there's a little bit of what's been going on. Now, just coming out today or last night was the 10th edition of the BBL. We'll kick off on the 3rd of December. The tournament will start 2 weeks earlier to allow room for contingencies around COVID-19. There'll be 56 games played, and there'll be 8 double headers. The final scheduled for the 6th of February. The women's BBL also be kicking off on the 17th of October, with the finals down to be played on the 27th and 29th of November. It's a total of 26 games in the WBBL, with three in the final. And there's actually going to be a mid-season Sydney hub for all 8 clubs, although there will be some flexibility depending on what's happening in Australia with COVID-19. And let's face it, it seems to be deteriorating there a little bit, particularly in Melbourne. Not great there. So moving along to South Africa. South Africa still planning to go ahead with this strange idea that they've got, with three sides playing 8-a-side cricket tournament in Gauteng. And that is supposed to be played this weekend. Now, Gauteng is the centre of the pandemic in South Africa, so it's where it's worst. And other grounds have been placed as standby should COVID-19 regulations force a change in the plans. And it's rather getting short in the day to sort of start changing plans too much there. So haven't heard what's coming out there with the tournament going ahead or not. But at the moment, as per plan, it goes ahead this weekend. And finally, as we reported last week, Sophie Devine had been retained as the White Ferns captain over Amy Satterthwaite. Satterthwaite this week stated that she's disappointed about missing out on the not regaining the captaincy, but really happy to be back in the team environment and looking forward to be part of the senior leadership team as the group's vice captain. And that's basically all we had in our weekly news for this week. The big news, though, is that Test cricket is back. And we've had our first test completed, done and dusted, with the West Indies going on to win that one. And this is where we're going to basically dig down a bit deeper into the game that was concluded on Monday, if I remember. It seems so long ago. Monday. Mm-hmm. And also then we'll just have a preview into the game starting tonight. But, yeah, look, I suppose the game it was at the Aegeus Bowl in Southampton. And just a few key points that we'll get us started with is that it's only Archer that looked like taking wickets until Stokes came on in that second innings. And I actually got lucky and saw the last session and a half of the tournament, of the match. So, yeah, it was quite sort of riveting viewing. Rohit, what were you able to take in of the test?
Well, yeah, I didn't really get to see anything, to be honest. But I was, you know, with cricket, it's really good because you can always check it up on a scoreboard and sort of work out what's been going on in the test as well, and then follow up with the reports and stuff. It was by all accounts, it was a pretty close test. Mm. And you'd have to say it's a really good win by the West Indies. You know, overseas conditions is always difficult to play in. And given, you know, the lockdown and all of that, all these extra added pressures, you know, hats go off to them with a fantastic start to that series for them.
Absolutely. So let's have a look. We're just going to quickly go through the scoreboard. And so we're just going to bring it up so that you can see it. It's just like what we see is that Rory Burns starting off well with a 30. Dom Sibley, basically going out in the very truncated day one and was the only wicket casualty. It basically set the tone, I felt, for England. And basically they struggled through with some good scores in the middle from Stokes, captain's hand, Butler and Dom Bess, to limping through to 204. At one stage, it probably didn't even look like they were going to get to 204. So we had, and then the West Indies, basically Holder, being the pick of the bunch there, and all the wickets picked up between Holder and Gabriel. Holder picking up a 6 for 42, and Shannon Gabriel picking up 4 for 62. So after the first innings, you'd have to say the West Indies would have been looking at being quite happy with how things had worked out, considering they lost the toss and were asked to field first.
Absolutely. And Holder, he's phenomenal, that guy, with great returns, 6 wickets. Therefore, is 42 runs against him in 20 overs. So, you know, being the captain of the side and holding up that bowling attack for them, you know, special guy, good talent.
Looking at that, I mean, we look at those figures for Holder, 6 for 20. So he was going at an economy rate of 2 runs per over. So he was keeping it tight. So he's not just only picking up wickets, but he's putting pressure on the batsman. He's putting scoreboard pressure, although it's a test match. Still scoreboard pressure on there. The runs aren't coming easy, and the batsmen are looking at where are the runs going to come from.
Yeah, absolutely. And you still got to bowl tight given test match, you know, because you've got to hold an end up and it's all about building the pressure, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And that's what those Windies bowlers managed to do. You know, they only use 4 bowlers there.
That's the other key point here. We look at it, they've used 4 bowlers. They bowled 67 overs in the innings, in the first innings, and they've only used 4 bowlers. Shannon Gabriel, the other standout, and with his pace, and although he looks a bit expensive at 4 runs and over, I think he must have got a bit of tap towards the end of the innings, because early on when I was watching it, he was actually very economical as well.
And they all, I mean, who's who was it? Gabriel, I mean, going at, what, 4 runs and over?
Yep, that's right. Picking so we're moving on. Four wickets and 4 runs and over. As if all 10 wickets picked up between Gabriel and Holder. So then we come to the West Indies innings, and we can see that they made a good start. I mean, they actually put on 43 for the first wicket after bowling England out for 200. That's a pretty good start to get the ball rolling for the second for their first innings.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you want to, you need to put on runs on that first innings, even when you're batting second, just to put the pressure on again for that team that's got to come out and bat again. So, you know, well, any lead is a good lead, you've got to say.
Taking basically, it was the is taking the advantage that you've gained in that first, making sure it doesn't slip. I suppose the only thing, I mean, when we go through there, nice consistent scoreboard from the top order. I suppose the only thing you could say is that you would have liked as a West Indies supporter for one of those guys to go on and get a big score.
Yeah. I mean, we've got to put in perspective a bit. So it is the first game after so long off as well. Mm-hmm. So everyone's going to be a little bit rusty, you'd feel. But, I mean, if I was one of those batters in the top six there, I'd be pretty happy with my result if I was one of them. You know, really the only failure looking at that, if you call it one at this stage, is Blackwood scoring 12.
But, yep, and it's ironic because we'll come to him a bit later, won't we?
Yes.
I suppose just our regular sort of panel member, Taryn, just in the saying who was the biggest disappointment in the first innings for England?
Yeah, look, you can't blame an opener going out for a duck, right? You know, he's faced four balls, he's probably got a bloody purler. So, that's going to happen. That's test cricket. So,
absolutely. Actually, I do. I mean, I did see the Dominic Sibley dismissal. He got one that went away, and the very next ball came back in. It's pretty hard going when you've just walked out there and it's the second over, and you've got one going away and you've got one coming back trying to get your iron. I think for me, it would have to be Joe Denley. You know, you've lost that early wicket, and you're really wanting that number three to just take your time and consolidate. And I suppose that's a number three's role, isn't it? You've lost an early wicket, you need to consolidate. You haven't lost an early wicket, you need to be able to play your scoring shots.
Yeah. Well, look, if you look at Joe Denley scoring 18, he was out there for 58 balls, so that's probably what, an hour's worth of batting or thereabouts.
Would be.
Yeah. So he probably got an unplayable one too without actually seeing his dismissal being bowled. But, yeah, it might be a bit harsh.
You reckon I'm being a bit harsh there?
Could be.
Well, just to say, the English selectors agree with me.
Fair enough, But they have to drop somebody, right? Because the captain's coming back.
Everyone's got to come back in.
Right. Typical openers comment. Well, you know, we always get those bloody pearlers early on.
So West Indies, nice first innings total, as you say, in light of the fact that first innings on English soil in their first test match, they racked up 318. You have to say that's a pretty good return, really, as you say. I mean,
solid.
You'd be a little bit disappointed. Maybe you would have hoped one of them would have gone on, but, you know, you're quibbling there sort of thing with 318 is a good score.
It is.
And basically the captain again. So he's done it with the bat, scored 40-odd, and he's come in and he's picked up four wickets as well. Good Kiwi lad. That's, you know, he plays cricket well.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, he didn't want to play for the Black Caps, didn't he? But no, you'd have to say, difficult position for Stokes, to be fair. You know, being the all rounder in the team, you've already got enough on your plate with all the work that you've got to do, right? As a batsman and a bowler, and then put the captaincy on it, you've got to think about field changes and, you know, bowling changes and all the like. So there's a lot of pressure on him.
Yep, absolutely.
And, he's performed, you'd have to say.
He's performed, absolutely.
Totally,
yes.
Totally.
And obviously with that comment that you made, was with the responsibility that he has wrapped up as a captain as well. We'll come to that in the second innings because it's quite an interesting thing that develops in that second innings, and we'll have a look at that as well. So we come along. So everybody spread the wickets around in the English innings. Interesting is that Jofra Archer didn't actually pick up a wicket in the first innings, which is quite a surprise.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised at that too when I checked out the scoreboard. And thinking, oh, he'd probably pick up a couple. And when I saw it, and I thought, well, yep, West Indies held their own against him.
what makes the first innings even more interesting, the fact that he didn't pick up a wicket, is that when you see his bowling in the second innings, this is like, how did he not pick up? If he bowled like that in the first innings, how did he not pick up a wicket? So interesting, that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we go to the second innings, England. Much better in the second innings. The 313. Again, I suppose, you know, the opener's comment, if you're going to sort of pick anything, it's the fact that England would have liked one of those guys to go on, particularly in the fact they're a little bit behind the eight ball with the low score in that first innings.
Yeah, that's right. You know, they put, what, 72 runs on for that first wicket there in that second dig. So, yeah. And again, you picked them out in that first innings with Denley. And again, he seems to have batted a bit of time. So, probably just a bit early season rust, shall we say.
Yeah, to be honest, though, with him not being picked for the second test, I don't know if there's a way back for him. There's a lot of talent coming through, younger talent. Yes. And then you got like a Zach Crawley who's then going, you know, basically 76. You know, so he's put a score on. So he's going to have a hard road getting back in, especially with Joe Root now coming back in as captain as well.
You'd have to think so, eh?
Yep.
Who was the guy I'm looking at? Ollie?
Ollie Pope. Yep.
Now, you know, he's the youngster in the team, isn't he? So, absolutely. You know, they'll be having a vested interest in making sure that they give him a fair go.
That's a really good point that you've raised, because the fact is that Ollie Pope is going to get a few shots. You know, the new player coming through, you go back in history, and one of the big mistakes that you can make with any new player coming in is like you give him one test and he fails and you sort of ruin his confidence and you turf him, right? So you basically, with these days, they do give newly selected players, unless they're filling in for an injury, they're usually given a pretty sort of a few test matches to try and feel comfortable at that level.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure Ollie Pope's is also a wicketkeeper. So, you know, he's probably wicketkeeper in waiting potential there. Yep. For the English team, because you got Joss Butler and the other keeper, the name eludes me. But if Ollie's given his chance and he performs, he could be that future keeper as well.
So Taryn's just letting us know. He obviously saw poor shots from shot selection from Burns and Denley. And obviously for Denley, that's not worked out too well for him.
Yes.
Big fifer for Shannon Gabriel in the second innings. Now, the interesting thing there is that with the fourfer in the first inning, he picked up 9 wickets for the test, which is a great return.
Fantastic, you'd have to say, wouldn't it? In your first test after a long break. Very, very good returns there.
So, basically, they sort of, they're sort of like, not too bad. They've got England out for 313, and their target is set at 200. And how would the dressing room be feeling as they start the last innings chasing 200? You'd have to say, with the way the pitch was playing, they'd be pretty confident.
You would say so, absolutely. You know, you'd need to have a good start, obviously, and poor old Windies didn't get off to the best start, didn't they, in that second dig?
No, they did not. They did not.
So, you know, they put themselves under a bit of pressure there. But you'd have to be confident that you were going to get there.
They were put under bucket loads of pressure. I mean, you were basically 3 down and effectively 4. With John Campbell got hit on the toe with a Jofra Archer special. And he had to basically left the field. It was a suspected broken toe. It's turned out it was a very badly bruised toe. But you're effectively 4 down for not much. Tremors going through the dressing room.
Absolutely, would have been. You definitely needed somebody to hold steady the ship down the other end, you would have, as they say, you know.
Yep, absolutely. And it's interesting. So you've got a really good partnership going with Roston Chase and James Jermaine Blackwood. And they really did right the ship. And not only did they right the ship, but they actually kept scoring at a pretty good pace.
Yeah. And I think it have been one of those cases of early nerves there for the opening team, and then just somebody to sit, you know, consolidate and sit around. Because it's funny what time does when you bat middle.
Yep.
Here we absolutely go. Tom's come up with, reports suggest the pitch was up and down, so... Yeah, would have been. Well, would have made that, that, more difficult, right?
Would have made it more difficult, and you expect that the second innings would have been even more up and down. Although the parts of the last day that I actually did see, it was coming through quite consistently, but then you got some pretty fast bowlers, and maybe they were getting the bounce out of the pitch. Yeah. So Jermaine Blackwood's the big one there. He's the one that sees the team through to the score of 200. If we look at it, Archer, as I said, there we go. He's got his three wickets in the second innings. And at times he was quite unplayable. And that's why it's quite surprising that in that first innings he didn't really pick up anything.
Yeah, it can be like that, though. Eh? You know, sometimes bowlers can go out there and have a really good day bowling wise, but still not get anything, and the wickets are picked up at the other end. And he could have just been building a bit of pressure. But if you scroll back up, how many overs did he bowl? I just missed that.
In the first innings?
Yeah.
In the first dig? Yep. Hang on.
22 overs. So he's 22 overs. Fair amount of overs there, hasn't he? So sort of would have suggested that he would have been bowling okay just without any luck, potentially.
That's right, yeah. You love it when those fast bowlers don't get any luck, they get angry.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But if you bring that up, what interested me was, I don't know if you remember, we were talking about the pitch.
Taking spin.
Yep. And what, there's 10 overs of spin bowling on that pitch?
Let's just, yeah. So, I mean, like, if we have a look,
I don't know if
there was a bit more sharing around of the bowling with the West Indies in that second innings. Dom Best got 19 overs in the first, so he got a bit of bowling to do, but it's not 10 overs in the last because only chasing 200. Again, what I saw, it's interesting, and I just wonder whether Ben Stokes in his first game as captain, maybe a bit hesitant to use the spin bowler. I actually thought that with spin at one end and pace at the other end, that's when the English looked likely on getting more wickets that way, actually. Although the run rate doesn't suggest it, the economy rate for Dom Best, he was sort of troubling the West Indies batsmen every now and then. That's what you're looking for, isn't it? You're not going to trouble them every ball. You're going you get that surprise one that comes along.
That's right. But it looks to me like it's pretty much, easily dominated by the pace bowlers that test match.
Yep. Sorry, Karen.
And the fact that, that we were talking about it taking spin, but it hasn't really featured that much.
It hasn't featured at all. Not really. Yeah. No, yeah. No. And just with Aaron in the chat room there, yep, absolutely. Jermaine Blackwood only came in because two players said that they didn't really want to travel to a COVID affected environment sort of thing, so or nation sort of thing. So yep, absolutely. Jermaine Blackwood taking his opportunity there, particularly in the second innings.
What have we got here? Like Stokesy.
Yep.
We were going to mention about him, right? Picking up two wickets there.
Yes.
Coming on as the, one, two, three, fifth change bowler by the looks of it.
Well, look, that's the interesting thing. So, okay, I was going to go to a few points, but we'll come to that. The fact that, I watched on the last day, effectively the last session and the hour before that, and Archer was bowling. Archer was, they had Dowrich in particular, was absolutely jumping all over the place, couldn't handle Archer. And you're wondering, where's Ben Stokes? Ben Stokes not bowling, Ben's not bowling. And it's almost like it was the final sort of roll of the dice. And he comes on, and there wasn't a lot of runs required either, and he came on and he picked up two wickets relatively quickly. And you're sort of thinking, what were you doing? You are golden arm. You are the man that picks up the wickets when they're needed. He needed to inject himself earlier in the second innings and have a more of a presence in that bowling lineup.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? And this is the whole argument that comes across when you've got a captain as the bowler being the captain and under bowling themselves sometimes.
Yep.
I mean, Holder is the captain, obviously, for West Indies and doing a really good job. But, you know, in his early days when he came on into the West Indies team as a youngster, he probably would have under bowled himself at that time as well. And this has been Ben Stokes' first test match as captain. You would have thought he probably would have bowled himself a bit earlier.
Yeah. look, in that competition, England needed to bowl West Indies out. They weren't going to save the test matches by keeping them under 200 or, you know, a drawn test match sort of thing. Mark Wood, Jimmy Anderson really didn't look like they were going to get a wicket. Joffre Archer, basically, Jermaine Blackwood was playing some interesting shots, I have to say. It is this particular sort of rampy cut shot that he kept playing against Archer, which was like, oh, geez, you had to sort of wince every time he played the shot. But he looked comfortable playing the shot, I have to say. He played it regularly. He looked comfortable. It just doesn't look good. As I mentioned before, Dowrich looked very uncomfortable against Archer. But against Anderson, against Wood, they look comfortable. They really didn't look troubled at all. And in fact, I think that's where they really looked to try and get the score, the runs that they needed to get to 200.
It's that extra pace that he brings, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It's the pace and the bounce, and he can bowl it pretty full and still get that ball to come up to you. Now, we're mentioning Joffre Archer, and that's the breaking news that's coming out of the England camp, and it is big news. It is big news. Joffre Archer has broken biosecurity protocols and has been stood down immediately from the test for tomorrow. It would have been a lay down Nazir to be selected for the game starting tonight, but has been stood down. He has been sent to isolation, to purgatory. He's been sent to isolation. He has apologized profusely on his stuff up. But he has broken isolation rules, and therefore he has been sent to further isolation. So he'll be out for basically, I assume he has to start his isolation protocols right over in the 14 days.
Yeah, I think he's been given 5 days self-isolation, and he needs to have 2 clear COVID test results.
Right, okay.
Before he can go back and join the squad, from my understanding. Yeah.
Look, so that's a big blow for England, and it's good on England. They can take the easy way and say, look, you've been a naughty boy, don't do it again. But no, they've said this is a serious matter, and they've come down hard on him.
Absolutely. You have to. You got no choice.
You got no choice, exactly. I mean, and they've apologized to the West Indies for their player doing this. And I think this has set the precedent, with lots of precedents being set during COVID. This has set the precedent for any and sort of put it on a wall. This is what's going to happen to you if you break your bubble.
Well, that's right. You know, it's the players know. What's required of them, and it's probably easy to do. I mean, I was just watching the other day a bit of coverage on the league, and they got the same sort of thing going on there, right? But one of the boys decided to go see his family members in the stands, and now he's broken the bubble. So
it's a cricket show. It is a cricket show, but I don't want to digress too much. But it's a weird situation. The guy actually lives with the parents, though.
But he lives
with the parents, but he's now being sent to isolation because he went and hugged the parents in the stand who he lives with when he's not playing the game. Exactly. So anyway, there's a digress on that. We'll come back. Look, I want to get back to Ben Stokes. He really does need to bowl himself. Well, Root will be back in as captain, so he should get more bowling, because reality is that, especially with Archer now out, he really is one of these strike weapons.
Yeah, I think you might have recalled, I was picking, Stuart Broad, very unlucky not to be picked in that first test. You normally would go in with your strength. The proven, you still got the scoreboard up, by the way. You'd go on with your proven experienced players into your first test match of a series. So, you know, Stuart Broad did come out during the week saying he wasn't a happy boy about being dropped, because he called it being dropped, not
rested. Yeah, well, you do. I think they talk about rest and rotation that, but everybody wants to play that first test in particular. So you're going to see it as being dropped. I think that's going to work for England, though, isn't it? It's going to work for them. He's going to come out really fired up in the second test.
Well, yeah, it is. But then from an England perspective, you would have wanted to see Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad and Jofra Archer being the strike three bowlers in that first test match.
Yep.
Now they're on the back foot, unfortunately, 1-0 down. So
1-0 down, Archer's out. Yep. They've got bringing Broad in. Anderson and Wood will be out. I'll bring up a bit later as we go into the teams. We'll talk about the teams a bit later, but I'll bring up what the possible 11s will be.
Right. So old Archer, I mean, it's unfortunate for him, but it's just one of those things and given the times.
Absolutely. So, look, going back, as I said, I think we will see Ben Stokes bowling more. He took 6 wickets in the match, so he got a decent haul. Even though, as said, in that second innings, he should have come on earlier. So he's done that. Look, I'm going to go to a fun fact next, and it involves Stokes. So Holder got Stokes out twice in the match. Stokes got Holder out once, and they were both the captains as well, let's remember. And it was like if Stokes had bowled himself a bit more, he might have actually picked up Holder as well, and it would have been a perfect match in terms of the captains getting each other out 4 times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. I do wonder if it's happened in test match.
I'd love to be able to. If I had Francis Payne there sitting next to me to go and look up those stats. Unfortunately, we don't have the budget for that.
Yeah. But you know, there is. I'm sure that has happened before, where the captains have got each other out in a game.
Yep.
It definitely would have happened in one-day cricket, that's for sure. But test matches, it is a different thing.
Test matches in all 4 innings, the captain on captain, spy versus spy. Look, I'm going to go. Just come back to Jermaine Blackwood. Proved to be the match winner for the game. His 95 was the score that won the game for them. He had crucial contributions from Roston Chase, who got 37. And Shane Dowrich, who got a 60 in the first innings and then followed it up with 20. But that 20 in the second innings was absolutely crucial. And I actually think it was more crucial than Roston Chase's sort of 37.
30, yeah. Look, it's one of those things. Cricket's that funny game, eh? The closer you get to your target, the more nervous players seem to get as well. It's just a strange feeling that you get as you're getting closer and inching closer to that target. Dowrich, you know, coming in there at the end, it would have been nervous times for him, I'm sure. But it was, you'd have to say it was a bloody good knock to see them through.
Absolutely. This is like, I mean, he was getting roughed up by Jofra Archer, but and the fact is that, you know, if Roston Chase has gone out, Dowrich comes in and he's gone, then that would have put the West Indies under immense pressure. And the nerves in the dressing room would have gone up a mountain.
Absolutely. And you got the tail coming in. So,
yep.
I mean, Holder can hold his own, but but you're still batting with the tail, so to speak. So you'd have to give, as a fielding team, you'd have to think that you've got an opportunity. Especially if you can open that other end up. So, he's done really well to stick around and score that 20-odd, because it would have been a crucial innings.
And the only thing that was disappointing for me to the end is that I felt that Blackwood threw away a certain 100. He wanted to wrap the game up as quickly as possible, and unfortunately spooned one up really out to mid-off.
It's the Calypso way, isn't it? It's got looking to smoke it over mid-off. So, unfortunately.
That's it. But, look, he really deserved that 100, I felt. Yeah. And this is like, sort of would have been nice icing on the cake for a good victory. But at the end of the day, I'm sure he would have gone in and celebrated the victory anyway, sort of thing. So wouldn't have been too upset about that.
No, he's made the contribution to that team towards that victory. So definite celebration for that. Yes, disappointed didn't get his three figures, but hey, still win a test match, and that's not easy to do.
No, that's right. Especially as we go right back to what we started with, winning it in foreign conditions, all the scenario around it with the lockdowns and isolation, etc. So I sort of think, yeah, absolutely. It's a fantastic win. And
yeah,
one thing we talked about off air, and I think we even talked about it last week, we keep underrating the West Indies.
We do.
A lot of us keep underrating the West Indies, and they're really just building and building.
Well, I put my hand up. I picked England to win the first test being at home. I thought that they would be able to do it. And yeah, here we go, proven wrong again. So,
do you know much about cricket?
Not really. But yeah, that West Indies lineup, they have been perennial underperformers from late 80s onwards, when they had the golden era, shall we say.
Yeah.
And really, everyone just sort of thinks about that golden era being their great times.
But absolutely.
What's happened since?
I think when you look at it, you look at the scoreboards that we've seen, there's not someone that consistently provides the scores. Again, going back to what we talked about last week, it is a team effort. There's somebody in the team that keeps bringing something to each innings, whether it's with their bowling or whether it's with their batting, that somebody stands up. In the first innings, a couple of players got 60. In the second innings, it was Jermaine Blackwood with the 95. In the first innings, Jason Holder got 6 wickets. In the second, Shannon Gabriel came along with 5. So everybody seems to chip in. And obviously, if you've got the team performing like that, where individuals are performing when others aren't, it's not going for them, it's got to create a great team environment, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's one of those things. And if you ever look at good teams, it's a team performance at the end of the day that's going to help you win the game, right? If you're relying on that one player, we've seen that being a New Zealand supporter over our period of dull times, being reliant on that one person to score your runs, it just doesn't
we'll
help.
Get the wickets.
Or get the wickets, exactly. So, and West Indies are really enjoying that period now where people are putting their hand up and saying, I'll do the job, Skip, give it to me, or, it's my day, I'm going to score the runs. So it definitely would make for a much better environment team-wise.
Absolutely. And the fact is that you don't have to freak out because Brian Lara didn't score the runs and, we're all going to collapse now. Because you've got that trust in the rest of your team to say, hey, look, I didn't – so-and-so or I got out cheaply today. You got somebody else that will back it
absolutely.
Up and
absolutely.
Come out and do the job.
It sort of reminds you of that great Australian era where they had really a number of greats in their team, but they also had players that performed on their day towards that success. So this is exactly what the West Indies are doing at the moment with different players putting their hands up. Crucial.
Well, so they've done the job in the first test. We move on to the second test. It's starting tonight. I believe it'll be about an hour after we shut down. So it'll be a 10 o'clock out in New Zealand time. Old Trafford, Manchester. And again, a ground that has, obviously with the lockdown, no ground's been played on. So it's going to be a fresh pitch. It's been undercover for a couple of days because the conditions have been raining. So just going to go over the pitch, the conditions there, what we're looking at. We're looking at overcast conditions, the forecast for the first 2 days, followed by rain on Saturday. So Saturday's not looking good. And then some sunshine breaking through. Obviously, with the conditions, with the moisture, the pitch has been undercover. There could be some fun for the seamers to be had. The pitch has been undercover, as I mentioned, for 2 days. Joe Root managed to have a sneak peek under the covers and on Tuesday. And he said that it's looking brown, but I'm still thinking there could be a fair bit of moisture in that pitch. Then basically being an Old Trafford pitch, it should be a little bit quicker than the Aegeus Bowl. And again, that will hurt England with Jofra Archer being out if it's a little bit quicker. And in the warm-ups, that produced a few runs as well. So, again, win the toss. What do you do?
Win the toss, you got to go runs on the board, you know. If you're looking at a pitch and it's looking dry, you would want to bat first, wouldn't you?
Yep.
Because you're going to get that up and down again in that fourth innings.
I suppose it's the thing is that if you're unsure what the pitch is going to do, it seems to be you go and bat.
That's right.
Put the scoreboard, get the runs on the board, and then basically back your bowlers.
That's it. Yeah. That creates the scoreboard pressure and advances the game one way or another too, doesn't it, these days?
That's it.
But, you know, looking at the lineup, like you were mentioning, it's probably going to be the pace attack for the Windies.
I think so. I mean, yeah, you have a part-time spinner in there, I suppose. I don't know. We're still trying to figure out who that was. But it's going to be interesting because the air temperature is only going to be high teens and low 20s. So, I mean, I think Taryn was there and might be able to confirm this. You don't get as much swing when it's a bit cooler.
No. No. You know, it's when it's a bit cooler, that ball is in the air. You'd have to, like, I'm no real bowler, but it's not.
No, you're a wicketkeeper.
I'm a wicket. But you're not getting that swing, that's for sure. You have a bit of seam movement, you know, yep. If you held that, yep. If you got the seam up, you get a bit of seam movement, but the swing might not be around.
Right, so it'll be interesting. The West Indies might be wearing a couple of jumpers when they wander out there.
Yeah, but I might be proven wrong again. So hey, I'm not a bowler.
And so we'll go. I'm just going to basically go through a possible. I'll bring this up on the screen. Actually, if you give me a moment.
Yeah, I was just thinking that is it Chase?
Roston Chase.
He's the spinner for the Windies.
Again, I could not. I love the on my yeah, knowledge there. Does
he's the offie for them? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
You know how many overs did he bowl in that dig? He had a few overs in that first innings, didn't he? In the second innings, I think he did.
He did, I think.
I'm pretty sure he's their bowler. It's the off spinner.
Might just bring up the hopefully you can see that. I'll bring it up a bit bigger there. So that's the possible English 11 to be finalized at the toss. So we've got Rory Burns, Dom Sibley, Zach Crawley coming into three. So he'll move up where Denley was at three, and Joe Root coming in at four. It says Ben Stokes is captain. I'm pretty sure that's just a typo that they've got.
That's
there.
An error. Yeah.
Ollie Pope, Josh Butler's your wicketkeeper. Now here's the interesting part, right? I think they've got Bess. Jofra Archer's obviously going to drop out. And Stuart Broad there. So it's going to be two picked out of Wokes, Curran, and Ollie Robinson. So they'll be. Whereas two of them were going to miss out, now only one of them will miss out on the 11.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know too much about Ollie Robinson, but...
No, I don't either.
You'd have to think, you know, you've got Stuart Broad being the experienced player there in bowler, no Archer. I would say you're going to have Wokes and Curran as my...
I mean, as I said, I don't know enough about Ollie Robinson, but I mean, like, you're going to go, you have to, because Archer's out, you're going to have to pick Wokes and Broad now, really. Have that experience there.
Yes.
And then Sam Curran brings another bat, is an actual all rounder and a very good all rounder. He holds the bat pretty well, too. So to me, you'd pick Sam Curran, wouldn't you, ahead of Ollie Robinson?
You'd think so. We'd have to check his stats and all for Ollie and see what he's done. But, you know, you're 1-0 down in the series. You've got to pick your experienced players to help you to get, you know, you want to win this next game.
Series over. I mean, West Indies are coming in to win this thing. So you want to. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I mean, you've just seen a sneak there below the England team. John Campbell. Now, he will be the interesting one for the West Indies, where, as it, his toe is not broken, it's bruised. So it's just going to be, how is he feeling? Is he going to be okay at the toss to be selected? So we scroll down and we've got John.
He'll be all right. West Indies. Archer's not playing.
Archer's not playing.
His toe will be fine.
It's all of a sudden magic water on it, and it's 100%. 100%. Yep. So look, I don't think we're going to really see a change. I mean, like the fact that we've just mentioned that the Manchester wicket at Old Trafford is going to be a bit more friendlier to the seamers, you're not going to change your West Indies lineup, are you? You're going to pick,
not really.
Keep picking the winning lineup.
Exactly. Why change the winning formula?
You know, exactly. So just going over it then. So John Campbell and Craig Brathwaite, Shai Hope, Charmaine Brooks, Roston Chase, Jermaine Blackwood, the hero from the first test, Shane Dowrich. Now, Shane Dowrich, he's going to be happy because, as I said, he was the one that was hopping all over the place when Jofra Archer was bowling to him in the second innings. Jason Holder, Alzari Joseph, Kemar Roach, and Shannon Gabriel. You look at that side and Shannon Gabriel, if the green pitch is green, he's going to be, or even got a bit of moisture in it, he's going to be sort of looking forward to bowling on that strip.
Yeah, you'd have to say so. Look, it's interesting. You're looking at that West Indies lineup and you're thinking, you know, which of the players that are going to stand out for you? You know, it's not somebody that you household names that you recognise in that team, really.
I mean, like Jason Holder is the name that you recognise. Kemar Roach is sort of a little bit there as well. But at the end of the day, no, you do not have the days gone by of West Indian teams where you started off with a Greenwich and Haynes, and in came Richards and Clive Lloyd, and then a little bit later Richie Richardson. You know. You didn't tremble too much if Larry Gomes came in, but...
but this is the interesting thing that we were talking about earlier about the West Indies team. Who was the bowler you mentioned that's not far off getting Kirtley Ambrose's record for the
Oh, that's right. So, yeah, just going back to a few of those, let me just... where have I put that?
It was, you know, when you're looking at their lineup and you're thinking, who's going to do the business? But they're doing the business.
They're doing it. So yeah, a few.
So it's pretty unfair. Basically,
you've got here's the things with Kemar Roach needs 7 more wickets to become the first West Indian fast bowler since Kirtley Ambrose. Now get that, since Kirtley Ambrose to reach 200 wickets in tests. So that's a long time since somebody from the West Indies, and it sort of goes towards why we sort of say, you know, we just don't see the success in coming through in the West Indies, but it is because you've got the likes of Kemar Roach now coming through, getting 200 test wickets or 7 more to get to 200, the first since Kirtley Ambrose. And I'm sort of like, it's a fair while since Kirtley Ambrose has been gone.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I was just watching some coverage a couple of weeks back of Kirtley in some of those one days and test matches. But, you know, we talk about many years of West Indies in bygone era, but are they on the comeback silently without us really knowing it?
And we've got to remember there's players that haven't been selected or have decided not to tour because of the coronavirus situation in the UK. They're building a bit of strength there. These guys have come in UK. If they get this test series win, it's going to build their confidence and they're going to basically have depth.
They are. They're building depth. I mean, you know, Joseph, Alzari Joseph, he's 23 years old. He's pretty young. You've got, I was just looking at some of the other young lads in the team there. Was it Roston Chase? You know, he's another youngster in that lineup. Oh no, not Roston Chase. Sorry, apologies. He's a ripe old age of 28. Yeah,
getting on now.
There was another 23-year-old or so youngster. I think he's the batsman in the team. I can't recall his name, but they're starting to build, you know, develop that depth at that other at the next level down for in the youngsters who are going to be the future for the Windies team.
And we also like look at Jason Holder is leading that team very well.
Absolutely, you know, absolutely. I mean, It was interesting. I recall when he first came on in the scene, and looking at watching him on TV and thinking, geez, that guy's a tall fella. One thing with tall, you always think it's going to be flying, right? And then he bowls it, and it's like, well, that's not that fast, which was quite interesting. And then you wonder.
He bowls that sort of around the 130 mark, but because of his height, he gets that bounce, doesn't he?
He's getting it right into the cage there. But he's an effective bowler, isn't he?
Well, he must be because so on the batting side, he's 83 runs away from reaching 2,000 runs in Test cricket, and become only the third. So he's gone past 100 Test wickets in the last home Test. So he's got his 100 Test wickets. He's 83 away from 2,000. Once he gets his 83 runs, he'll become only the third West Indian player behind Sir Garfield Sobers and Carl Hooper to achieve that feat. So 2,000 Test runs and 100 Test wickets. That'll be, something that hasn't been achieved too much in West Indian cricket. So I suppose if you think about it, you don't get a lot of all-rounders in West Indian cricket. You get the awesome batters and the awesome bowlers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the whole thing about the Jason Holder, isn't it? I'm sure I remember him playing against the Aussies when he first came into the team. And he was probably their fourth change lineup. And he was a youngster as a captain for that team. Don't forget that. They picked him quite young.
Yep. Yes, they did.
For the captaincy, right? Yep. And he wasn't a proven player back then. So he was the one that actually brought the Windies together. And he's done the, I always say, he's done the Clive Lloyd of West Indies, bringing the team together. And that's why they're performing so well.
So you'd have to say, I mean, just from Aaron's comment in the old chat rooms there, comments rooms, they have been succeeding pretty well at that under-19s World Cup level. They've tipped up sides like India and Australia, and now I believe that talent's starting to come through.
Absolutely.
And you've got someone like your Holder, who's obviously a very good leader and is starting to bring that talent through with them.
That's it. And, you know, all you can say to everyone else is watch out because they are coming back.
That's it. It's just success breeds success, right?
Exactly.
That's what it does. Use cliches. Ooh, cliches. So, look, just a couple of other trivia stats for this test match here. Joe Root, his average at Old Trafford is 85. So, the English will be looking to really get that back into their batting lineup, that sort of success. And on the back of that, England have actually got a 9-1 loss record. So they've won 9 out of the 9-1, the 1-9 lost 1 out of their last 12 tests. Their last loss was against Australia there last summer. So they've got some good records there at Old Trafford. Joe Root bats well there. It's going to give them some sort of confidence going into this test as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if they've got the record there, haven't they? So it's a favourite hunting ground for them.
Yep.
And, you know, it's probably good timing for the English, to be fair, to be playing at their favourite hunting ground, given that they're 1-0 down.
1-0 down. They need to build some confidence, get some back in there.
Yep.
They've got the players to do it. They've got a bit of an experience, but they've also got some good experience there as well. Root, Stokes, and then with the bowling with Broad and Wokes.
Well, how much pressure is Root under coming into this test?
Yeah, I suppose he has to perform, doesn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. he's coming in cold, really.
Coming in cold, yeah.
First test.
Yep, and he would have been. I don't think he was involved as much fully in the warm-ups as well. Yeah. So, yes. Now, just to go back to an earlier question from Aaron around Joe Root. So what happened, Joe Root was in isolation after the child arrived, and it was in isolation by himself. And that's why he wasn't available for the first test. So he had to complete his private isolation before he could then rejoin the team. So he's effectively done what Jofra Archer's now doing with his indiscretion. So that's the story there. So Joe Root back into the squad after his isolation.
Well, yeah, and you know, he's going to have to get some runs in this match to really help that English effort.
Well, if you're the West Indies, you've got to say you've got to take advantage of that. You've got to know that, hey, he hasn't had the time in the middle. He hasn't had, you know, it does take a while to get back into the groove of things. Exactly. So you really want to make sure that that ball is being pitched in the right place.
Yeah, and given the way the Windies bowled in that first test and just going through and analysing that scoreboard, you'd have to say that's exactly what they're going to look at doing. You know, it's another test, and they'll definitely be putting the English under the pump.
Look, I think a lot of their success is coming through to discipline. And it's, you know, you as a bowling lineup, especially in this professional era, it's just like you just got to know, okay, going into a match, this is the length, this is the line that we have to bowl, and that's what we have to bowl. If we don't, we will go for runs. And you're starting to see more and more sides actually become more disciplined in their bowling delivery.
Well, you know, with the tech that's out there and TV replays and everything, coaches are seeing it all live in front of them, and they're able to get the word out to the players in the middle. So, you know, they're getting told where to bowl, line, length, that type of thing as well from the sideline. So, you know, cricket's evolved in that sense. So there's more information being shared while the game's happening. So that's only going to help the bowling team, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yep. Finding out the flaws in the batter's techniques.
Absolutely.
But then in saying that, you know, it's just like goes, okay, your flaws in the batter's technique. Batsman knows he's got the flaw. He goes away and works on it.
He's got to work on it in the test match. It's not going to be easy.
He might have been crawling around under the covers having a look what the pitch does, but that's not going to help his batting.
No. He's out there in the heat of the battle. So and it's you know, him versus the bowler. Bowler's got all the advantage in the sense that they've got the knowledge and what's going on, and the coaches and sideline also being part of that team.
Absolutely.
I
think so. Now we basically just wait an hour until we sort of start the first test. Hopefully it's not like the second test. So hopefully it's not like the first test. And the fact is that we all got in all this anticipation, sit down to watch the start of the first test, and the covers were on.
Yes.
We're hoping for better weather out in Sam in Manchester today, and I haven't actually had a look at what's happening out there, but hopefully we'll be able to get on there. Look, I think, you know, we've sort of talked up the old second test a bit there, and it's probably a good time to sort of like leave it at that, go away and see what happens, and then we'll come back and talk about it next week.
Absolutely. Hey, look, so we're going to have a pick for the week.
Let's have a pick for the week. What are you picking? I'll go. Let you go first.
Oh,
who are you going to jinx?
Oh, look, I picked the English in the first test. I'll jinx them again.
We have to admit we're sucky pickers. Look, I mean, I think it's going to be a tough one for the West Indies. I actually think the English have to realise that they have to get up. So they're probably going to be psyched a bit more than the West Indies. So, and Stuart Broad coming back in, he's going to, as I said, he felt like he was dropped. Root's going to come in. He's going to have to prove himself. Stokes, he's got the pressure of off him, off his shoulders of the captaincy. It's gone back to Joe Root. So I sort of think, I think it's a close one. The first test was close. There wasn't a lot left in that. There's only four wickets in it at the end. But I'm going to go with the English, actually. I sort of think they're probably going to need to – they're going to want it more. So I'll go with the English as well and jinx them as well.
Interesting you say they want it more.
Yeah,
the West Indies are going out for the win of the series too. So
they are. I understand what you're saying, but I mean, like, I'm sort of thinking – it's home conditions, and you know, you don't want to lose at home, do you? You want to be the one that wins your home test.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's the advantage of playing at home, isn't it?
Yeah, and yeah. Like, obviously, at the end of the day, it's England, so the option is of a draw yes. because of rain is always there as well.
Well, you did mention overcast for a few days, so that could turn into rain.
Hey, well, look, hey, thanks once again for joining us on the show, Rohit. And thanks you to all the people that were watching and listening. Make sure you get out there and share so that all your friends can also see and hear the great show that is Swinging from the Hips. Remember, on New Zealand Sport Radio, you've got a myriad of shows. Monday nights, we've got Hash Rugby Chat. Tuesday, if we can get some contestants, we've got Do You Know Your Sport? Wednesday night, it's the league show with this standoff. Thursday, this is where you want to be for your cricket fix with Swinging from the Hip. And previews for Super Rugby Aotearoa and Super Rugby Gold, or AU if you want to call it that, on Friday nights. And then reviews on the Sunday night. Everything you need to know for sport in the mornings at the Morning Sports Briefing, all here on New Zealand Sport Radio. Make sure you tell your friends about it. And we'll see you back here next Thursday on Swinging from the Hip.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.